Brother Gannon, in which you had a Jewish man who had converted to Christianity, and he was a practicing monk or friar, and he came to Israel, and he wanted citizenship. Now, in the eyes of Halacha, even an apostate Jew who converts to Christianity is still a Jew. You cannot convert out of Judaism. Yisrael, afal pi shechata Yisrael hu. He absolutely is a Jew. And yet, the Israeli courts, under the law of return, denied him Israeli citizenship by basically saying, he who practices another religion, you can be an atheist, but at least if you practice another religion, you are openly identifying yourself as a member of another faith community, you cannot be a Jew for purposes of the law of return. That's very interesting. That's kind of a rare case where the Knesset is more machmir than halacha in defining who is a Jew. But be it as it may, technically the law of return is not a halachic matter per se, but indirectly it certainly is, because if you admit more and more non-Jews with citizen rights in the state of Israel, you are endangering the idea of Israel as a Jewish state. Now, it is an open secret, actually not even a secret, but it's a very, very well known that when you talk about the Baruch Hashem, the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of immigrants that have come from all over the world, particularly from the Soviet Union, from some other countries as well, there are very, very severe questions regarding their Jewish status. Now, what's interesting is, people say, well, we have to have some way to convert all these people, or we're going to have a majority of non-Jews in the land of Israel. But if you think about it in that way, you see what an artificial way of resolving a question that is. That is, basically, you know, somebody once said, the way we could solve all the intermarriage crisis is just declare that anybody who marries a Jew is Jewish. So that way, there's no such thing as intermarriage, because if you marry a Jew, you're a Jew. Well, that's great, but that's solving a real problem by a definitional sleight of hand, and that's not solving the problem. I'll give you an example from medical ethics we were talking about yesterday. You know, the co-discoverer of DNA, James Watson, he was a brilliant researcher, but you know, he got involved in some political issues, and he was once dealing with the very difficult issue of what to do with defective, severely handicapped newborn infants. Because we do live in a society that allows abortion, etc., Rahman al-Islam. So if you catch it early enough, secular society gives you a solution. But Nebuch, once the kid is born, what do you do? Can't do anything about it. You're kind of stuck. So he suggested, well, given the fact that abortion is kosher, I mean, secularly, but infanticide is not kosher, right? Society doesn't allow that. Why don't we just have a rule that says birth occurs 72 hours after emergence from the womb? So we will simply call terminating a child after within 72 hours a late-term abortion. And by calling it that, you're going to be okay. Well, obviously, the name, what Humpty Dumpty, and if you remember Humpty, Alice in Wonderland, said, words can mean whatever I choose them to mean. And you don't solve ethical problems by just redefining your terms, because the problems don't go away, you've just switched the labels. So in many ways, to make the point that in order to preserve the Jewish nature of the state of Israel, we have to be more open in our conversion laws so that more of Israel's citizens will be halachic Jews, is really non-logical, because whatever negativity you have with non-Jews being citizens of Israel does not go away by artificially calling them Jews. Now, so in terms of demographics, that is not really a justification to be made. Now, there are going to be other issues I'll talk about, individual justice, unreasonable standards, I will talk about that, and those are real problems. But to simply use demographics as some argument that we have to be lenient in the law of conversion is the same thing as basically redefining a birth as 72 hours after the womb. Let's make everybody Jewish, and that way they're Jews, and they're not non-Jews, and therefore everything is fine. Yeah.
Can you sort of just say that two different approaches, and you united them, but it's not really fair because they're different. You said that could solve it just by calling them all Jews because
yep.
they came to America.
Right.
Well, that doesn't work.
Yes.
Being more lenient a little bit in conversion is a whole different...
No, it is.
It's not the same thing. And in fact, there are views that, I mean, maybe it's not to be in the couple, you know, what does it mean to be in the couple of those of mine?
Yeah, of course. I will talk about that. I certainly will talk about it. You're 100% correct. I was just making an introductory remark that you can't use social demographics per se as a way of diluting standards, but you are correct. There are different ways halakhically of understanding how the standards do work. First of all, we have to know that there's a passage in the Gemara that says something. And there are two diametrically different interpretations. It's very, very fascinating. The Gemara in Yevamos quotes Rav Chelbo, one of the Amoraim, that says, "Kashim geirim li Yisrael kesapachas." Converts are as difficult for the Jewish people as a leprosy. It seems to be making a negative judgment. But listen to the two interpretations. One interpretation that's given is, because there are converts that are insincere, that are ignorant, that don't do mitzvahs, and they make things bad for us. But Tosfos brings an interpretation in the name of Rabbi Avram Hager, who himself was a ger, that says, geirim are bad, are difficult for the Jewish people, because they are so conscientious and meticulous in their observance. They are so committed to the Torah that they make the native-born Jew look inferior in terms of his observance. These are two different perspectives, and the truth is both are true. Remember that Moshiach comes from the prototype of the sincere, righteous convert, Rus HaMoaviah. From Rus, the daughter of Moab, comes David HaMelech. From David HaMelech comes Moshiach. Hashem B'davka made it that way, that the ultimate Redeemer comes from a Gioris. And the Torah says many, many times, over 30 times, the prohibition of insulting or demeaning a ger in any particular way. Onas hager is a very, very severe prohibition. And the Rambam has a famous letter. And wow, I would hate to be on the receiving end of that letter, because you could actually feel the Rambam's anger seething through that letter. In a very unusual way, because you look at the Rambam as the rationalist par excellence who never loses his cool, but this made him lose his cool, where he got a letter from Rav Avadya Hager, and Rav Avadya was instructed by his rabbi that when he davens the Amida, when he davens the Shemona Esrei, he should not say the phrase Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoseinu, the God, our God and the God of our forefathers, because Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were not your forefathers. You have to say Elokeinu v'Elokei Avot Yisrael. And the Rambam says, whoever that rabbi is, he's going to go to Gehenna, and he's going to be punished. How dare he talk to you that way? How dare he give such a psak? Because the meaning of Avraham Avinu being our forefather is anyone who embraces the belief in one God, and anyone that embraces the Torah and the mitzvot, is the true son of Avraham and Sarah. And the Rambam says that such a person is osid litei nesadin, by somehow diminishing the great chashivas of one who comes to embrace the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that way. And as I say, this is a very unusual letter in tone, because the Rambam writes with extreme passion, and the anger is palpable through the actual narrative of the letter. So let me go over very, very briefly some of the issues, and in particular the issue of retroactive annulment of conversion is a biggie. First, the Gemara in Yevamos tells us that the laws of conversion are derived from Matan Torah. Interestingly enough, all of the Jewish people converted to Judaism at Matan Torah. It was not Yetzias Mitzrayim, it was Matan Torah. Now, by the time we received the Torah, all of us went through, or the men went through three steps, the women went through two steps. In order to receive the Torah, we had Bris Milah in Mitzrayim, right, circumcision. We immersed in a mikvah in water before Matan Torah, as it says. And by saying Naseh V'Nishma, we accept the Torah, we accepted the mitzvah. So the three requirements for conversion is mila, tevila, kabbalas mitzvahs. For a woman, it is tevila and kabbalas mitzvahs. And these three steps, or two steps, have to be done in front of a beis din. There is some little controversy going on right now about mikveh and what the basin has to see, etc. And there are various scandals that are being addressed, whether they have to see a tefillah or they stand outside the room. I don't want to address that particular issue. People are discussing that particular aspect of it. But generally, it's mila, tefillah, kabbalas mitzvos in front of a basin. Bizman hamikdash, there was a fourth requirement. A ger had to bring a korban. You were not a ger until you brought a korban, and that was true at Matan Torah itself, when the Jewish people brought olos ushlamim, but the Gemara has a drasha that when there's no korban, it's not required, meaning bizman hazeh, we can have geris without a korban, because when you can't bring a korban, the element is dispensed with. Now, mila and tefillah are not the controversial issues. You know, anyone that's a ger, a male will have mila tefillah, and a woman will have tefillah. But the critical issue is, what do we mean by kabbalas mitzvos? And that is something in which there's a great amount of talk here. That is, if you look at the earliest sources of geirus, and here I refer both to the Gemara and to a brisa, in a little collection of brisas that is actually called Maseches Geirin, and there's a bit of confusion. Maseches Geirin is not a full-fledged Maseches. It is a group of tractates in the Talmud that are called Masechtos Ketanos. And we're not really sure, are they from the Amorayim or are they from the Gaonim? So when you have a brisa in Yevamos and a brisa in Maseches Geirin, we're not entirely clear if the Gemara in Yevamos is quoting Maseches Geirin or Maseches Geirin is a later book that is quoting Yevamos. We're not sure about the chronology there. But it actually seems to say that the process for conversion was this. A person comes, he says, I want to be Jewish. And we try to discourage him initially. Hey, to be a Jew is a tough thing. Jews are persecuted and hated and despised. And are you willing to do that? And if, after the requisite discouragement, the person still says he wants, so it actually says we inform him Mixas, selectively, kalos v'chamuros, some of the lenient laws, some of the strict laws, and we say this is representative of certain fundamental aspects of the Torah. And if he then says, I am willing and I want to accept this and I want to do this and I commit myself to what the Torah says, we go ahead and we're magayirim, which means to say, as far as the Gemara was concerned, Medina de Gemara, there was no requirement that a candidate for conversion know all of the areas of halacha, but it really referred much more to a commitment. I am committed, just like we would say a person commits themselves to the derech of Yadus, to the derech of Torah, and then, like Hillel, right? If you take the Gemara literally, right? Hillel, the non-Jew, went to Hillel and said, teach me the whole Torah on one foot. And Hillel said, what is hateful to you, do not do to another, and the rest is something, go and learn. And the Gemara's Lashon, it's a machlokas, it says Hillel converted him. Now, it's very critical, there's a machlokas. Does that mean Hillel converted him? Or does it mean Hillel accepted him for a conversion program? Because if you say Hillel converted him, and that's the Lashon of the Gemara literally, Hillel gairei, that would imply indeed that a person could be converted with very little actual tangible knowledge as long as he is committed. If we simply say Hillel accepted him for conversion, then we don't know. Maybe Hillel put him through a 10-year program. We're not entirely clear. And there is a machlokas rishonim. But the point there is that at least when it comes to knowledge, it seems in many, many ways that Chazal did not require that the person have smicha, so to speak, that the person be a great Talmud Chacham. They were focusing much more on commitment. And indeed, Rav Chaim Ozer said the following, that since the term that Chazal used are kabbalas mitzvos, not shemiras mitzvos, Rav Chaim Ozer said that the criterion for geiras is not even whether or not the person will keep mitzvos, but rather whether they regard mitzvos as obligatory. In other words, in his case, he was dealing with the following scenario. Where a person believes in the Torah, a person believes that the Torah is obligatory on the Jewish people, But a person might say, I'm not yet ready to give up certain things. I know it's wrong, but I'm not yet ready. If I might differentiate it between a person that says, I don't believe that, you know, keeping kosher is important, versus the person that says, I know Jews are supposed to keep kosher, but I live in Montana, I'm not yet able to get kosher food. Now that's a sin, of course. But Rav Chaim Moser said, in the first scenario, he has not accepted the mitzvah. In the second scenario, he has accepted the mitzvah, but he's not yet able to conform his lifestyle to that mitzvah. Now, Rav Chaim Moser said, l'chatchila, you don't accept a person, even if he's not going to keep them. So we say, we'll wait until he's ready. But at least be the evidence in terms of recognizing somebody as Jewish. Rav Chaim Moser made the point that even if a ger is fundamentally non-observant, if he regards the Torah as the binding law of the Jewish people that's given from God, that is a valid Kabbalah mitzvah. Now, this is a great, great important leniency. But it may not help us very much in Israel for the following reason. Meaning, Rav Chaim Moser does indeed tell us that even if a ger is non-observant, he can be regarded as a Jew as long as he or she regards the Torah as binding and the Word of God, because we're focusing much more on his belief system than we are on his actual behavior. But the problem is, of course, we're still confronted with a problem that sometimes there are conversions where even the belief system may be lacking. I mean, Rav Chaim Moser will not help us in every single case, although in quite a few cases, this is a very useful
chilek. Isn't it more, isn't it really
Kibel,
Kiyu, Asa, and the Yonah says that he's Makabel, it's like he's done already, not just that he believes it.
Well,
he doesn't want to be Makabel that way, but still, that
doesn't believe
it.
No, I understand, but Kibel means he believes that it's binding, so that's why it's
Kibel.
Well, I understand, but that's just okay. Good. So, what does that love the sketcher? But he's not. But it means he's not doing it.
But it's not just he believed it.
But what does Kibel Kiluasa mean? But be it as it may, I do want to point out that even Rav Chaim Moser's tshuva is b'diavad. In other words, because Rav Chaim Moser quotes the Gemara in Yevamos that says that if a Beis Din knows ahead of time that a ger is not going to keep a mitzvah, we are not allowed to do the geras, but Rav Chaim Moser says we would not cast aspersions. Now, let me talk a little bit about this retroactive thing, about annulling a conversion, because I want to give you three scenarios, just to put it in perspective. There are three situations. Situation number one is a person accepts the mitzvahs, and then later they go off the derech. It is absolutely 1,000% clear. No conversion can be annulled because a person goes off the derech and has a change of mind. The same way, because once he validly converted, he's a Jew. There is no way you can invalidate a conversion retroactively because of later non-observance. It's not shaykh. Because at that point, it's Yisrael, afal pi shechata, Yisrael. So that's scenario number one, and that is no responsible basin would ever do such a thing at all, because halakhically there's absolutely no grounds, regardless of how the Jerusalem Post describes what is done, that cannot be done and that has not been done. Now, scenario number two is the opposite extreme. Scenario number two is where the Beis Din knows at the time of the conversion. They know at the time of the conversion, okay, that the person does not intend to keep Shabbos, does not intend to keep kosher, and they either know this and they do it anyway, or they don't ask the questions, etc., but they know that that's the case. Now, in that case, there is what is called umdana demuchach. Umdana demuchach means we have a clear understanding that in this person's mind, he does not intend to accept the mitzvahs. Then the conversion should not have been performed in the first instance. The Beis Din is not allowed to perform a conversion under those circumstances. Are conversions sometimes performed with those circumstances? Sometimes they are. I'm not saying it's often. Sometimes they are. Now, in such a situation, would the conversion be invalid b'dievet? That may depend on Rav Chaim Moser. If the person really believed, then maybe it'll be valid. But if the person didn't even have the belief system, it wouldn't be valid. But so that's a case where you're not, again, vocabulary is tricky here. You're not invalidating a conversion retroactively. Essentially, you're simply declaring there was no conversion to begin with because you're lacking Kabbalas Mitzvahs. So these two extremities are halakhically not problematical, meaning in case one, you absolutely cannot invalidate a conversion, and in case two, you absolutely can invalidate a conversion unless you have Rav Chaim Eiser. Here is case three, where there's a great, great deal of machlokas among poskim. That is, case three is where, at the time of the Maisa Giyur, the Beis Din actually thought that the person was sincere, but it later appears to us, not that he changed his mind, but it appears to us that we were mistaken, we were defrauded, we misunderstood the situation. Externally, it looked like a sincere Kabbalah, but the circumstances indicate, now how do you know that, there's another question, but leaving that, how do you know, the circumstances indicate not that the person changed his mind, but that he never had it in his mind to begin with. So here is the halachic problem. We have a general rule in all transactions. Devarim shebalev einam devarim. For example, I marry a woman, but I'm thinking in my mind it's a joke. I don't mean it. I do it in front of witnesses. I say later, oh, I was joking. According to the halacha, even if we would have an x-ray of my mind afterwards, we could retrieve the thoughts, and we could know that I was joking at the time. But if at the time of the Kedushin that was not apparent, a mental reservation that was not apparent at the time cannot be mevatel a Kedushin, it cannot be mevatel a get, it cannot be mevatel a business transaction. That's devarim shebalev einam devarim, unless there is umzina demuchach, meaning at the time of the Kedushin, we knew it was a joke, like the kids that might marry a girl in the playground, etc. So, if you apply the paradigm of devarim shebalev to giyur, that would indicate that any giyur in which there was an apparent acceptance of mitzvot would halachically be valid even if we discover later that it was insincere, because devarim shebalev einam devarim. So here is where some of the Rabbanut Batei Din and the Rebbe Yashiv and others came to a fundamental big machlokas. And that is Rebbe Yashiv's position that in Giyur, there is no rule of Devarim Shebalev Einam Devarim, because his argument is that since the very essence of Kabbalah is acceptance, Kabbalah is describing a mental state of commitment. So how can you possibly say Devarim Shebalev, your mental state, makes no difference when Kabbalah is Ikrei Belev? And therefore, it was Rabbi Yashiv's position that if the circumstances are such that it is apparent to a Beis Din later, that there was no intention to accept mitzvos at the time, remember, don't confuse this with later is a change of mind. That for sure is not a problem. But we see later, for example, he goes to the mikveh on Thursday, and right after going to the mikveh, he goes to a non-kosher restaurant or whatever it is. So it's clear there was no Kabbalah, but we didn't know it at the time. Rebbe Yashiv says we will invalidate the conversion. There are other Batei Din that take the position that Devarim Shebalev Einam Devarim does apply to Giyur. So the point that I want to make is that the controversy about invalidating conversions retrospectively is focused on a narrow group of cases, and that is where it was not apparent to the Beis Din at the time that there was a lack of sincerity, but later it is discovered that there was, and the machlokas is Devarim Shebalev. Now, that is the halachic principle. However, there is a lot of factual uncertainty here as well, and that is, sometimes the accusation is made that there were Batei Dinim that knew there was insincerity at the time, in which case it would not be valid. But the Rabbanim say that wasn't true. We didn't know at the time. Right? So that's a he said type of problem, which is a very, very difficult problem. And also, there is sometimes difficulty in evidence, meaning to say, somebody converts, and 6 months later, they eat treif. Does that mean they weren't sincere? Or does that mean they had a change of heart, like people have changes of heart sometimes? Does that mean they don't believe in Torah? Does that just mean they're not keeping Torah, like Rav Chaim Moser? So there are a lot of different difficulties in how you characterize this. And, all right, it's one thing. I gave you an example where a person goes to the mikveh and then 5 minutes later he eats treif. So that's pretty clear that probably in 5 minutes he didn't have a change of heart. But what if it's a month later? What if it's 6 months later? What if it's 10 years later? Is it possible? Certainly it seems intrinsically unreasonable that non-observance that doesn't take place until a long time after the gear, that does not seem to make sense to be indicative of a state of mind at the time. Yeah.
Let me make 2 quick points. First of all, you said that the laws of Eros and the place that we really became the Dara was up in Dara.
Yep.
We had Mila, we had Mila, and we had Asa and Nishma.
Yep.
And
then the Chayra
Eidah. And
very good point.
So, you know, yeah. And we're all still Jewish. That's number one.
Yeah.
I deal with Mila and Ron for years.
Yep.
The biggest problem with Mila is always the religion, conservative, reformed gay, and then telling them that I can't do your bit, sorry, I'm
yep.
not really ashamed gay or something.
Right.
But it used to be simple. I used to tell them, you know, if only you would have converted to Orthodox, it would be okay.
Yep.
And I couldn't. And I can't say that anymore because it is really overturning other Orthodox.
Yeah.
And it caused no amount of.
Well, I'll tell you this. It, in a way, it's made life a little easier because for American rabbis, I think, because one of the big pressures that rabbis face, I guess more of them face as well, is that you have non-religious people that, let's say, adopt children, and they come and they say, I want my child to have a conversion that will be accepted in Israel. And they don't keep mitzvahs, but they say, I want, you know, a conversion that they're going to accept, therefore I want an Orthodox conversion. So now I could say to them, hey, if I do an Orthodox conversion, they're not going to accept it in Israel, so, you know, there's nothing I can do for you. So in a way, it makes it a little easier, but I'll talk about the issue of converting children. But the point I wanted to make is that the halachic principles of invalidating conversions are really not so much, I mean, the Dvarim Shebelev is a major dispute, but a lot of it is how you interpret the facts, and that is, when do you look at a lapse as indicative of a defective state of mind at the time, and when do you say, who says? People change. People go on. Now, what's fascinating is, if you go back historically to the 1970s, many of you might remember Rav Shlomo Gorin. He was Rav Rashi, and he was first he was the Rav of the Tzava, and he was involved in a very, very famous, really an infamous case of the Langer brother and sister. The Langer brother and sister were Rashum. They were put down as Mamzerim when they wanted to marry, and because they were born from a second marriage, and their mother had not gotten a get from her first husband, and as a result, I think it was in Beersheba, one of the regional, but they didn't, registered them as Mamzerim that were Pesulei Kahal. Now, unfortunately, this became a big scandal in the Israeli press, which talked about the medieval maintenance of blacklisting, that people are put on lists of Mamzerim, which of course they are, because there has to be such a registry. And Rav Gorin, who was at that point retiring from the army and was interested in becoming the chief rabbi, he was for a short time the Rav of Tel Aviv. So Rav Gorin kind of promised a way out, a halachic resolution of this issue. And indeed, he issued around an 85-page psak din. He convened a beis din. The members of the beis din were anonymous except for him, because he said he did not want to expose them to harassment and the like. And his psak basically was that Chanoch and Miriam Langer were not mamzerim, and they were permitted to marry. What was his yesod? His yesod was that Mrs. Langer's first husband was a fellow Avraham Borakowski, who apparently was a Polish Catholic, who converted to Judaism after World War II. And Rabbi Gorin found that Mr. Borukovsky was not Shomer Mitzvahs, and therefore Rav Gorin invalidated the conversion by finding he was not a Shomer Mitzvahs, and therefore Mrs. Langer didn't need a get because she was married to a guy, and because she didn't need a get, the kids are not Mamzerim because they're born from a marriage that didn't need the first marriage did not need a get. Now, it's interesting that this was considered to be horrendous among the Haredi Dayanim. The Haredi Dayanim felt, how on earth can you possibly invalidate a conversion that was done in front of a Beis Din? There were mass resignations. Rebbe Yashiv himself resigned from the Beis Din because he would not work under Gorin. Technically, he would under Rabbi Gorin. He would be under Rabbi Gorin. He refused to do that. Other day, Rav Avadya Yosef, who was the Rav HaRashi of the Sfardim, also wanted to resign, but Rebbe Yashiv told him that he needed to stay in the Rabbanut. Now, again, Rav Gorin was quite a very, very brilliant Talmud Chacham, and I do not want to say anything negative. I just want to report that there were other cases. So on one hand, Rav Gorin invalidated a conversion because Borukovsky was not Shomer Shabbos, and that was years after his conversion, even though the conversion was done by a Beis Din. And yet there was another case where he validated a conversion of a woman that had a Reform conversion, and she wanted to marry. She married a Kohen and came to Israel, and Rav Gorin was willing to reconvert her, even though she would live in sin with the Kohen, and she was a Reform person who lived on a non-kosher kibbutz, with the strange condition that the conversion is valid only as long as she lives in Eretz Yisrael. Because he took a position that connecting to the Jewish people via Yishuv Eretz Yisrael was sufficient. Now, these two different mahalchim seem to be very, very contradictory. It really depends who you want to benefit. If you want to benefit the Langer children, you invalidate the conversion. If you want to benefit Helen Zeidman, you validate the conversion. But that's very, very difficult. But what's interesting is that superficially, and only superficially, the very thing Rav Gorin was condemned for by the right in the 1970s is indeed what they were doing, you know, now, in terms of invalidating conversions for non-observance. But the difference is, as I say, in Borukovsky's case, there was no reason to cast aspersions on him because he had been Shomer Shabbat initially, and then he went off the derech. That's totally different than a situation where somebody stops keeping the mitzvot right away. So,
can't you also bring in the fact that your mamzer only if you know that the person is a mamzer?
Yeah.
If there's any suffix, he's not a mamzer, I think.
Well, that's under Torah law. Yeah, under Torah law.
So you don't have to prove that the parents, that the father was not halakhically converted, even if it's just a suffix.
Well, yeah. But the question is,
the person
was converted by an Orthodox Beis Din, and the person had been a Shomer Mitzvot at the beginning. So to say it's a suffix that maybe what he, I mean, you know, there's certainly a chazaka that he validly converted. So it's a very, very painful issue, and certainly you have to know by now some of the invalidated conversions have already had children, grandchildren, some people in Kollel. And now they discover that they're not Jewish, and they have to undergo their own conversions. I'm not at all, again, these are thousands of conversions. I have not examined thousands of conversions. I cannot opine on them. But as I say, there is no such thing as invalidating a conversion that was valid. The only possible basis of invalidation is if it was never valid because of an insincerity that was present at the time. Even then you have Rav Chaim Moshe, and of course let me just mention too that many people point to tshuvos of Rav Meir Ben Sion Uziel, who was the first chief Sephardic rabbi, together with Rav Herzog with the Hakamat HaMedina. And Rav Uziel did have, I have to admit, Rav Uziel was a great esteemed posek. he did have a very, very different view of Kabbalat Mitzvot, and he basically took the view that if people identify with the Jewish people and people want to be Jewish and people accept the Ikrei Yamuna, he felt that was sufficient. Again, I cannot say that most poskim follow Reb Uziel. Most poskim do not follow Reb Uziel, but at least this was an approach that some have articulated that might be utilized in Giyur.
Yeah.
Yes, Rav Goren mentioned that people are willing to give their lives. Yeah,
that's a significant
thing. It is. And let me just mention Zeri Yisrael a little bit. There is a concept, Zeri Yisrael, which basically says that even if people are halachically non-Jewish based on matrilineal descent, they come from a non-Jewish mother, but if they have a Jewish ancestry in their blood, even if halachically they're not Jewish, there's a certain relationship that we have to them. Now, what is the relationship we have to them? It doesn't mean they're Jewish. But it does mean, for example, some poskim have said, Rabbi Kamenetsky said, but in the earlier poskim as well, that such people, there's a mitzvah to be makariv them, there's a mitzvah to initiate and be proactive, that instead of discouraging, one tries to welcome them. But here is where you hit a little bit of a wall, and that is that Zeri Yisrael does not permit a compromise on your standard of Kabbalah's mitzvahs. It simply permits you to be proactive in trying to bring them to that particular level. But it itself would not be a compelling reason to change your definition. Yeah, I understand. So your argument is that it might be a reason to follow one definition instead of another definition. Again, it has to be Masur L'Gdolim. But all I'm saying is that contrary to the way some people represent it, Zeri Yisrael is not in and of itself a leniency in your definition. It simply permits you to be proactive in bringing people to that particular step.
I just wanted to point out, it's not always possible to know the status of a gayrus. Maisa Shahaya. About 13, 12 years ago, my son's wife read a shidduch for my younger son.
Yeah.
To her best friend's sister.
Right.
Large from Brooklyn family.
Yeah.
This was the youngest of many. And she gives me the name, and I said, gee, that name sounds so familiar. I think my sister was a Rebbetzin in Far Rockaway. I think she mentioned that that's her best friend's niece. And I also remember about 10 years before that, my sister had mentioned that her best friend's mother was a Gioris. You can't imagine what from people I'm talking about here.
Yeah.
I called my sister and I said, I have a question to ask you, to a public request. You have to call your best friend and ask her who did the Gioris on her mother.
Yeah.
She gets back to me. Rabbi Goldman on the show. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Goldman and my father were very good friends.
A great man. Yeah.
Right. They were very good friends. And Rabbi Goldman was no longer alive in this place. But his widow was here in Yerushalayim, but she wasn't all there.
Okay.
I didn't know what to do. So I called up Rabbi Shetendler in Muncie, because he also was my father's good friend and the same age, and I figured he knew Rabbi Goldman. I said, Rabbi Chandler, I tell him the story. I said, Chandler, something is off because I knew Rabbi Goldman very well. He never did Gairus. So the story, it could not be confirmed. Yep. And he said, Tirza, drop it. Because they've got a lot of married children, a lot of married grandchildren,
right,
who are in Amish role. You're going to, if you're going to start digging, you're going to upset a lot of families.
Yep. Well, sometimes there are inyanim in halacha that you don't open up certain areas that will create problems. That is very true. But you have to know when, because sometimes you're mechuyev to expose things, sometimes not.
You've got too many people's lives at stake.
Yeah,
right? I don't want to be.
Yeah. Now let me just mention this issue about American. Many conversions of American Orthodox rabbis will not be accepted in the state of Israel. And basically because, now on one hand, it's offensive. On the other hand, there's also a certain justification. And that is certainly the history of the American rabbinate. I would assume the majority of conversions are valid, but sometimes they don't ask questions. I mean, I'll give you a Maisa Shahaya about a rabbi of a shul, who's the president of the shul's son was marrying a non-Jewish woman. And he went to the rabbi and he basically said, I want you to convert my future daughter-in-law, or you will lose your job. Now, one particular rabbi gave up his job. He became a little bit of a hero because he simply resigned. But sometimes the pressures are very, very great. You don't really understand this. And the pressures are, you compromise. You know, are you willing to keep mitzvahs to the best of your ability? Are you willing to, do things, but without really asking, too many questions? What you don't know, like Clinton's policy for gays in the military, don't ask, don't tell. That type of thing. And as a result, it's impossible for the rabbinate to keep tabs on, every single rabbi and every single conversion process. So as a result, they had a deal with the Rabbinical Council of America, which established kind of a uniform program with training periods and sponsoring rabbis. And they basically said, we will work through this global gayrus system, and we will not really accept individual conversions unless they're on an approved list. And there is a short approved list the rabbinate has, half of which the rabbis are not alive anymore, etc. So it's a very, very difficult situation. So on one hand, when I was a rabbi, I did many conversions. I did probably 50 conversions in 25 years. And most of them have already been accepted before, but I would have to admit that some of my conversions would not be accepted either because they were not done via the RCA system. So on one hand, people criticize the RCA system as being rigid, as being mechanical, because not everybody needs to go through all of this particular procedure. Keep in mind, if somebody has been involved in Jewish education and Jewish life for many, many years, even through a conservative or reform type of environment, and now they've decided to move to live a Torah life, they may have a lot of good background. I mean, some of it may be incorrect information, but they may know a lot, they may know Hebrew, they may read Hebrew, they may be familiar with a lot of rituals. So to put them through a process where they're starting from square one, when they've already lived years and years and years of a Jewishly meaningful life on some level, is a little mechanical, a little rigid. And people have argued it's better to leave every rav with the responsibility of deciding when a candidate is ready. So on one hand, that's kind of a feeling I have. On the other hand, from a bureaucratic perspective, I think all of us should understand that the rabbinut has to pass on really hundreds, if not thousands, of different giurim coming from different rabbis. So they prefer, as bureaucracies do prefer, to go with something definite, predictable, standardized, automatic, and mechanical, instead of having to make ad hoc determinations. So, I'm not happy with it per se, and I think there is much to criticize in the RCA system, but it may be the lesser of two evils. Yeah.
But the problem is, like, in that convention, Rav Uziel,
yes,
who came up with an accepted son, but not that everybody does. But if he did his urim according to his, and that he felt that the person really had was makabel, that believed in the Jewish system, believed in the Torah, but maybe didn't do all the.
Yeah.
But that, if you go back to that, should have been good enough. But then the other base they won't accept it. Like, it just opens up such a.
Well, you see, you're 100% right. And this is the same problem I mentioned with Aguna, and maybe even worse. Meaning to say, the one thing that is not really acceptable in Klal Yisrael is to have a scenario where people are going to be Jew. I mean, this is already in Conservative Reform Movement. We already have that, where people are Jewish, quotation mark, under Conservative Reform standards, and not Jewish under Halakha. To take that machala and put it even within Orthodoxy, where one group of Orthodox Jews will say, you're Jewish, and another group of Orthodox Jews are going to say, you're not Jewish. That's intolerable. I mean, how does it work with Shidduchim? How does it work with future generations? So this is one of those things where almost by definition, the most chamor dick of views are going to drive what's going to happen in the halachic marketplace, simply because you have to have a standard that everybody agrees upon. Huh?
That's very sad.
I understand.
And I do want to point out
that part of the problem too is that sometimes there is external ideology that gets imposed here. So, for example, you'll hear things like, I've heard a Rav say this, that anyone who believes that the 6 days of creation don't have to be 24-hour days is puzzle to be on a Beis Din, and his conversion is invalid. That is pretty crazy, frankly. Or anyone that has an iPhone is puzzle. Of course, that may solve the Aguna problem if all the marriages are puzzle. Okay, So when you start moving into those in Yonim, and again, these are Pashkavilin halacha. These are halachas that emerge from street signs, and no one knows if they really represent Piskei halacha. You get into a tremendous thing. I heard a well-regarded Rav say in Washington, D.C., he was from Eretz Israel, and he said in Washington, D.C., if you believe that the 6 days of creation are not 24-hour days, you are pasul li'edus, you are pasul l'dayonus, and your geirus is pasul. And he was making this statement at a geirus conference. This wasn't like a just off-the-cuff remark. So, if those things are meant to be taken seriously, I'm not sure they are, but I think he meant it seriously, then you're creating all sorts of divisions that go well, well beyond the debates about Kabbalah's mitzvahs, because then you're posseling Dayonim, and that creates a big circumstance. I mean, I'll tell you, Lehepech, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik actually said that even some conservative conversions, this will go back, might be valid if the Rabbanim on the Beis Din were privately Shomer Shabbos. Now Rav Moshe disagreed. Rav Moshe did take the Shita that the very affiliation with movements that do not officially recognize the divinity of the Torah passels you no matter how personally observant you might be. That was Rav Moshe's Shita. But Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said, at least L'chumra, after the fact, L'chumra, he said, we have to be choshesh that many conservative conversions might in fact be valid. Again, those are different. I'm not giving you a psak in that. All I'm saying is, this is way, way different than the notion that if you have an iPhone, you're automatically puzzled. So there are really two different avenues that are going on here. One is the definition of Kabbalah's mitzvos, and the other is who is kosher to be a dayan on the inyonim of conversion. And they intersect a little bit, but these are two different issues. One is the basin puzzle, the other is the candidate, Mechusar, the necessary Kabbalah's mitzvah. Now let me mention another area that's very, very interesting, and that is the area of the Giyor of Ketanim. We know that the Giyor of kids or even babies is predicated on a very different yisod, because technically a child below bar mitzvah, and certainly a baby, cannot accept mitzvahs, right? There's mila and tefillah. Doesn't mean you throw the baby in the water, but the adopted parent may go into the water with the baby, etc. But what is the Kabbalah's mitzvah? So the Gemara in Ksuba says that the acceptance of the mitzvahs is based on, like, we, the Beis Din, accept for him, because since being a Jew is a good thing, it's a zechus, it's a privilege, it's a benefit. Just like we mentioned yesterday, you can confer benefits on people even without their consent or without their knowledge, unless they protest and the like. So the Geirus of Ketanim is based on Zochin Liadam Shelo B'fanav. Now because of this, there are some Rishonim that say that even if the child is going to be raised in a non-religious environment, the conversion could still theoretically be valid because it's a Zechus. It's Yadua that Rav Moshe Feinstein was very much against that position. Rav Moshe Feinstein said that it's only possible to consider the Giyor a zechus for the child if the child will be raised to keep Shabbos and keep kashrus. Because for Keret, if he's not going to be raised to keep Shabbos and keep kashrus, even if, he'll be Jewish, etc. But for Keret, it's more of a detriment to be Jewish and have averos than not to be Jewish. So because of this, the psak generally in most of the world is, in the Jewish world, is that we will be megayer a child only if the parents are committed to keep. Now again, they don't have to be fully Orthodox, it's a subtlety, but they have to be committed to Shmirat Shabbat, to Kashrus, maybe not Taras Mishpacha, because that doesn't impact on the child, and to give the child an Orthodox chinuch and be supportive in what the school is doing. So technically we're not looking at the parents, we're looking at the kid, but Lamaisa, that means you have to have an Orthodox environment. But there are some rabbanim, maybe you call them renegade rabbanim, rogue rabbanim, who do take the alternative position and will do a giyur on ketanim based on zechut, even if the parents are not religious. And to say that the conversion is definitively invalid, you cannot say it would at least be a giyur misafek. Because unlike the adult conversion, where for sure, if there's not a Kabbalist mitzvah, it's invalid, the predicate of Zechiah may not require that, although Rav Moshe disagreed. I will tell you this, just to give you an example of what happened. We know, of course, the giyur of a katan, when they become bar mitzvah, they can renounce it, etc. Rav Chaim Eicher is a very interesting point, because we face this sometimes. Baruch Hashem, there are very few katanim that when they become bar mitzvah, they renounce their conversion. But it could happen. Rav Chaim Eicher says that stopping becoming religious is not the same as renouncing. Renouncing means I don't want to be a Jew. If it's simply I don't want to be frum, Rav Chaim Eicher says that is not equivalent to a renunciation. And unfortunately, the kid is stuck. He now becomes a non-frum Jew, but he does not undo his conversion. That's a very important chiddush, because quite a few teenagers, unfortunately, go off the derech. But Rav Chaim Moser says beferish that going off the derech is not a macha, it's not a protest, and it does not invalidate the conversion. But a case that I was involved in after the fact, I didn't know at the time, an intermarried couple. The woman was not Jewish. They had a daughter, and a Beis Din was prepared to convert the daughter, but the parents weren't from, but only if the daughter went through an Orthodox education and it looked like she was committing herself. This was an intermediate standard where you weren't looking at the parents, but you wanted the girl to become from. So the girl entered the school in first grade. So the condition basically was, the school made the condition that, you know, you have to become a from home within 2 years. Otherwise, the kid has to leave because we can't have goyim in the school. What happened was, the girl remained in the school, it was a co-ed high school, through 12th grade. Because what are you going to do? It's harder and harder to tell her to leave. She was absolutely a goyim. Okay. Now they say Hashem has a sense of humor, because the sense of humor was that not only did this non-Jewish girl finished the school without a conversion in 12th grade, but she was the Hebrew valedictorian of the school. Now, there's a real big problem. The school, so somehow, the school called me up when she was a senior about to graduate. After she was valedictorian, they said, you know, the girl's not Jewish. She didn't have a conversion. We give her a diploma from a Jewish school. This is going to be evidence to the world that she's Jewish. What do we do? Well, a little late, but what wasn't my decision, but what the school decided to do is they treated the diplomas like a package of cigarettes. They put on the diploma the presence of this, on every diploma, the presence of this diploma should not be taken as evidence of Jewish status. One must consult with their local rabbi. But you see the horrendous complications that that institutions give themselves. On one hand,
whoever presents the diploma is proof of anything. After.
Well, people do all sorts of things. But you know, especially in a co-ed setting, people date. Unfortunately, I'm not endorsing it, but people have all sorts of social interactions. And on one hand, you're admitting non-Jews who are Ketanim into the school on the smach that they'll be exposed to Yiddishkeit and want to become from, and then we'll do Zochen, either Zochen Liyadim Shlobafanav, or we'll wait until they're 12 and do a Gerit, because once they're 12, that's a regular conversion. And yet, you have no idea how that outcome is going to come out. You have no idea. Now, Baruch Hashem, this story, this little story, happens to have a very happy ending. The girl went to Israel as a non-Jew, because, you know, but she went to Israel, and she eventually became a religious woman. She underwent a full giyor. She got married, and she has children that are B'nai Torah, living in Eretz Israel. So Baruch Hashem, in retrospect, it turned out to all work out perfectly well. But this is a, you know, if you go into the field, this is a real, real problem that schools have. They are presented with children who are halakhically not Jewish, and their choice is either to perform a conversion based on zechus, even though the kid is not religious, which is against Rav Moshe Feinstein's psak, or keep them as goyim in the hope that they'll become religious and then do a conversion and the like. And either one of those is a real, real risk. Because in one case, you're doing a giyur that according to Rav Moshe is not valid. In the other case, you're allowing goyim to stay in your school system, which can have all sorts of negative consequences. So these are some very difficult problems. Yeah.
How does all this apply to the Jews that are, well, they're the thinker Jews, from ancestors of the Inquisition?
Well, once again, there would have to be a decision of the base. I mean, this was an issue that we faced with the Ethiopian Jews, and this is an issue that we faced with all sorts of populations that have Zera Yisrael blood in them. But over the years, there were intermarriages and the like. The standard advice, although it's not so easy, is that to resolve all doubts, it is better to have a giyur misafek, a doubtful conversion. In other words, do a conversion just in case. I just want to add this, I know the hour is late, I just want to say that giyur misafek sometimes seems like an easy thing to do. Just tell somebody, just go to the mikvah, just resolve your doubts if you're a religious person. But I encountered a situation, I remember when I was just many, many years ago, where, you know, I blithely just told a family that had been living as Jews for many years that, you know, maybe just go to the mikveh again in front of a beis din. And it was very traumatic. It was psychologically very devastating for somebody who had been living a Jewishly observant life to discover that because there may have been a problem in their mother's conversion, that they would have to convert again. And they asked the question, what about all the mitzvahs that I've been doing for 50 years? Are you telling me now that maybe I was a non-Jew doing those mitzvahs? So, as a rav, you know, we can say, oh, go ahead, just do another conversion, just cover your bases. But psychologically, that can be quite devastating on somebody's self-image. Now, that doesn't mean you don't do it. Sometimes you have to do it anyway. I'm not suggesting you change the halacha. But anyone that's involved in this at least has to be sensitive to the psychological nuances as well. It is not a simple thing to tell somebody who's been living as a religious Jew for many years that they need to undergo a conversion process. So part of a Rav's job is to be very, very sensitive, at least to the feelings that are involved, but not to compromise halacha in spite of that rahmana. So you have to learn how to cry with the person as well, even when you have to give them negative news. Okay.